Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association, the New Year's edition, as my buddy Kevin Luco from the 10th Inning Stretch and I discuss with you exciting events from this past year and what we're kind of looking forward to in 2019. But first of all, let me start by saying to Kevin, Happy New Year, Kevin.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Rob.
Quite a year we got to enjoy this past 2018.
Yeah, I got to ask, were you awake at midnight?
Not a chance. I don't even care about stuff like that, to be honest with you.
I'm right there with you. I laid down, I watched some hockey, and then laid down, was listening to a podcast, and before I know it, it's 12:30 at night, lights are on in the bedroom, wife wakes me up, oh, Happy New Year, by the way. So, you know, not quite as a big deal when you get older like we are. You know, how we're really old.
Well, you know, it's one of those things I've never gotten really super excited about, the whole New Year's celebration. You know, never really been a holiday that's been a big deal to me. And so, staying up and watching the ball drop or whatever it is we're supposed to do, it just never really got too exciting for me. But maybe I'm just weird that way.
I think the ball drop thing, if you're not in New York or not on the East Coast, it just... To me, it's like, well, okay, it's still not midnight here, so why should I celebrate it turning midnight in New York? So, you know, if there was something in the Midwest where there was like, you know, here I am in Minnesota, if there was like a big to-do happening at Mall of America or a big party somewhere where it would be worth it to go and have something festive and have a big to-do once it hit midnight, yeah, you know, maybe that would have been something to look into, but no, I just don't get in. Nowadays, I don't get into going down to the local bar and hanging out, having beer, and then worrying about driving home afterwards. And I'll get on a little tangent about that because it seems to have turned into a tangent. I can honestly tell you, if you're a regular at a bar, the worst night to go is New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I agree.
Because this invariably happens to me. When I go to a bar, I'm not wanting to get anything ritzy. Just, I'm going to go to the bar, give me my Miller Lite. That's all I say. Want a Miller Lite. Of course, I get stuck behind Ashley all the time that will... You can tell she never goes to a bar the whole year until New Year's Eve. Now, it's on this Ashley's night on the town. They got a babysitter. She's going to let her rip. And it usually goes something like this. She'll get up to the bar, and I'm standing by her with my money in my hand, just wanting my damn beer. Here's Ashley.
Do you have that one drink? You know, the one, the fruity one, it's red, and I have some orange juice in it, too. Do you know that one? I was wondering if I could get one of those. You know the one I'm talking about? Every time. Meanwhile, I'm parched. I just want a damn beer. So, yeah, it's just, New Year's Eve is just not a fun night for a regular bar guy, so... And now that I'm not one, you know, don't really feel like I'm missing much.
You're bringing,
let Ashley have her night out.
You're bringing up one of the primary reasons why I never have really partaken in the big New Year's festivities is because probably 50 or at least 40% of the people that are out that night would never go out otherwise. So it's you know, you doubled your bar population, and I'm like, okay, I don't really need to be there at all. Satisfied of being at home.
Lots of Todd's and Ashley's.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we're off to a pretty exciting year here for 2019. Kevin and I were talking about before the show about already a few kind of interesting celebrities passing away. So let's hope that's not a sign of what 2019 is going to be like here. So,
No, a rough day today with three of them passing away. It was Mean Gene Okerlund, a Minnesota guy that a lot of us that grew up in the 70s and 80s remember quite well. And
then captain from the Captain's Neil, and I forget the actor's name, but he played Super Dave Osborne. So, yeah, it was January 2, rough day. So let's hope that was just, hopefully it's just an aberration.
For those of you who are wondering who Super Dave is, he is the precursor to all of these crazy antics that you saw people try on the internet or whatever. This guy was always doing crazy stunts. Kind of, was it Showtime or something like that, I remember. So quite a routine he had going on. Well, 2018 was an exciting one around the American Association, Kevin, and we wanted to spend a little time discussing some of the highlights that happened and what we have to look forward at 2018 heading into 2019 in the league. And I think no news was bigger this season. There were two big stories that started out before the season even got underway. And the biggest one was Rafael Palmeiro joining the Cleveland Railroad, excuse me. Kevin, I'll be the first to admit that I thought this was going to be a really tremendous deal. Wound up kind of never materializing to what I was expecting, at least.
Yeah, I guess the good and the bad of that, the good part is that I didn't have to do a show while inhaling helium. You can remember I made the vow if Rafael and Patrick combined for 30 home runs that I would do a show on helium while inhaling helium. So, good thing that never came to fruition, but yeah, it was it provided for nice fodder when Palmeiro went on the road. I saw it in St. Paul where it was the second day of the series was pretty much a media scrum, and for the places he did go on the road, local media had stories they could run, and fans could bring their old Palmeiro baseball cards out to get signed. So it was a nice little sideshow, but it just, as you can tell by the Railroaders record, it didn't help him much in the field, and Rafael at his age had a hard time staying healthy. So other than a few, you know, feel-good moments, it just, yeah, it didn't make a big impact on the ball club.
That was the sad part about it, was that, you know, a guy who obviously has a lot of pride in his ability, one of the a handful of guys with 3,000 hits and 500 home runs in his major league career, but just could not get on the field. 31 total games this season. I know it had to be kind of disappointing. Our good buddy baseball Brit there, Joey Mellows, had asked me if I thought Rafael would be back this season. And with the changes that have gone on there, I was skeptical in the first place because I thought this was kind of whether he walked away from 2018 thinking, I want to do this again another season. And I got to be looking at this thinking the answer to that is going to be no.
You know, that was my answer too, but then when there was the big press conference to announce all the Wichita guys coming in, Rafael Palmeiro was added, so I wouldn't totally count it out, and maybe he comes back as a coach or a player coach, but a player coach, I just don't see if you know he's only going to be part-time, you don't want to waste a vet spot with that, so I wouldn't count him out completely, but I would say pretty unlikely that he's going to want to go through the whole thing of trying to stay in shape and be a productive ball player again. Props to him that he was able to play as many games as he did. I tell you a personal story. I just tried to go to a open skate and threw ice skates on for the first time in 5 years. I hurt all over, so, and I'm only 48, so the fact he was 53 and was able to get himself ready to play baseball, you got to give it up to the guy.
And I believe from the research we were able to do, he became the oldest player in at least North American baseball, professional baseball history to have a home run, 53 at the time that he homered there, his last home run there with Cleveland. So the guy still had it. I mean, he was still hitting pretty well, finished with 301, just unfortunately couldn't get out on the field enough there.
Yeah, you know, the game I saw him play in St. Paul, he didn't hit any out, but I think he either got walks or struck out that night, but I mean, there were some really hard hit foul balls where you could just tell the swing was there, but maybe the timing was just a little bit off. So, you know, yeah, you know, he made a good accounting for himself when he was healthy.
The other big story heading into the league this season, as 2018 got underway, was the Chinese national team joining the Texas Air Hogs. For fans that haven't really been in tune with this, a lot of rule exceptions were made in terms of how roster conditions were set for the team to allow them to rotate basically 13 new guys onto the roster each and every night. That didn't sit well with everybody around the league. The team finished, not surprisingly, with just 25 victories this season. We got to see some dramatic improvement, but was it a worthwhile investment for the league, or was it kind of more of a sideshow more than anything else?
Well, I believe it was part sideshow, part investment, because yeah, I mean, these players did get better as they got used to the speed. The speed of the game's a lot different than they were dealing with in China. So, I mean, they had flashes. They had some games where they got some pretty nice wins, but yeah, they took their lumps too. But I guess now we see what do you do next year? Are you bringing the same guys back, or are we just going to start all over again? But if you bring the same guys back and they've been through the league once, they got nowhere to go but to get better.
Well, the big deal seemed to be that these guys were getting themselves ready for 2024, when the Olympics is going to be in Paris, I believe, that year. And the Chinese team is trying to get themselves prepped for trying to compete in that. And get, now the baseball is going to be back in the Summer Olympics there. And we did see some exciting baseball. The thing I'm going to pat these guys on the back about is the fact that they were out there having fun all the time. I loved watching them before games when they were, doing warm-ups and stuff like that, because they were out there enjoying it. I mean, we talk all the time about, players will say to us that this is a little kid's game, but you don't see the little kid in a lot of adult professional players anymore. But these guys were really playing that way.
And that's good, too, because, before the game starts, the umpire says play ball. He doesn't say work ball. So
exactly.
Yeah, I just think if guys are enjoying themselves, I just think it kind of rubs off on your teammates, and I think it even rubs off on the fans too. That they enjoy seeing guys out there and enjoying what they're doing instead of just going through the motions.
Before the season began, there was some dramatic change in the league itself. It began with Miles Wolf remaining as commissioner, but sort of stepping aside and turning over the job of running the league to Josh Buchholz, who had been the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks general manager, became the executive director of the league. I know this was kind of an exciting season for Josh, maybe a little bit more exciting than he expected.
Yeah, there was definitely stuff that he had to deal with right away, so it was kind of a baptism by fire for him, but it was interesting when I got a chance to get up to Fargo and kind of see that it's no big, huge command center he's working from. There's not monitors that are on every game. He's actually gets a chance to be home with his family at night when he's not on the road conducting league business. So a lot of his afternoons are spent making sure teams are compliant with the salary cap. So, it's not really flashy work, but yeah, it's we'll see what happens if Wolf eventually just wants to ride off into the sunset, and maybe we see Buchholz take over as a full-fledged commissioner.
The big change also in the league was the realignment of divisions. We had 3 4-team divisions 2 seasons ago. This last season they switched to 2 6-team divisions. We'll talk a bit about the playoff races as we get through here, but that did have a dramatic change in what went on this season and how teams played and how the league played as a whole.
Right. It was about as balanced as a schedule as I think we've seen in the league in quite a few years, where it was pretty regimented, where teams had one series against each team home and away. And I think, did we have it where some teams did not go to the other team's ballpark, or am I mistaken on that?
No, everybody played everybody this last season. So
okay.
Which was a change, big change.
So yeah, division-wise, it made it more fair where, you know, everybody played against everybody, but the same amount of time. But what it did lead to was some controversy. You know, some people were upset in Wichita that they actually had a better record than St. Paul, but they didn't make the playoffs because the way the playoff system was set up, where you have the first and second place teams made the playoffs. So, and not just like they did in the past where wild card regards the division made it. So basically I'm getting to in a roundabout way that if it was a 2017 system that Wichita would have been in and St. Paul would have been out. But, you know, if, what are we going to do? Just change the rules every year willy-nilly? You know, it just doesn't make sense. So just got to play with the cards you're dealt with.
Actually, I think if the divisions were aligned the way that they were, it would have oddly been Gary that was out because they'd have been in the Central with Sioux City, and Sioux City would have won that division. And then Kansas City would have been in the South with Salina out, and it would have been Kansas City winning the South and Wichita being the wild card and St. Paul winning the North, I guess. So that would have been interesting how that worked out there. So,
well, I guess what I was making was just the way that they choose the wild card instead of being strictly two division second place teams that would have been.
Somebody would have been out, yeah, that made it.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
They just went by best overall record amongst all the non-division winners that would have been Wichita making it. But,
well, Kevin, heading into the season, we had a brand new team in the Chicago Dogs, managed by Butch Hobson, former Boston Red Sox manager and longtime Atlantic League manager. Team got off to a very tough start at 1-14 at one point, and that kind of, you know, sunk their season. But they rallied to win 45 games, and it was an exciting time at the ballpark, fun ballpark to go to, fun team to watch.
Right. I mean, there were growing pains on and off the field with the Dogs, but as the year went on, it seemed like we saw them be a lot more competitive on the field. I think we still would like to see them fill up the park a little better, but it's a crowded Chicago baseball market, so that might take some time and take a little extra on the promotional part to make that happen. But, yeah, the Dogs, that was one of those teams where if we would have had, like, a first and second half format, I would have been really interested to see how that would have all panned out. I think you would have seen Chicago been in the chase for a playoff spot by the virtue of a real strong second half.
You and I talked a lot about during the season managers like George Samus, who basically reconstructed his team all season long until he finally had a team that made it all the way to the championship series. We saw manager Joe Calfapietra have to do a lot of changes with Kansas City because of signings. Butch Hobson had to do a lot of changes in Chicago to develop a team there, and I thought he did quite a job. I think there were like four or five guys on that team that were on the starting roster by the time it was said and done.
Yeah, there was the point I guess I've kind of driven home quite a bit is that I just think that Hobson may have underestimated the American Association a bit, and it just didn't seem like the team that he originally constructed was conducive for competing. And I think once that he saw how tough the league was going to be, he adjusted accordingly and had some connections and brought some guys in and made the Dogs a very good ball club.
Heading into the season, you and I believe that the Sioux City Explorers were the team to beat. They proved us to be correct, at least during the regular season.
Right, yeah, I guess Luca Panier jinx didn't kick in until the playoffs. But, yeah, another solid year for Steve Montgomery down in Sioux City, and he did it by virtue of pitching and some pretty decent offense. But the pitching, we talked about it, about how many guys he brought in and allowed him to construct quite a pitching staff. A staff so good that, matter of fact, there were guys that got released that went on to have decent years with other clubs. So it might kind of be a blueprint on how you want to develop a pitching staff.
I think so, too. And three winning streaks of at least 9 games during the season, that's just remarkable to me.
Oh, right. Yeah, especially in that division too, with you had good ball clubs of, you know, four out of the six clubs with KC, Sioux City, Lincoln, and Wichita were all very good ball clubs. So if you're rattling off that kind of a winning streak in that sort of competition, that, yeah, it says a lot for your team.
Absolutely, and did an amazing job on the road, only losing like six or seven games during the season. That was pretty remarkable what manager Steve Montgomery did there. While Sioux City was rising, we had a surprise kind of collapse this season as Winnipeg really just kind of never got rolling to start out the season and suffered one of their worst seasons in team history.
Right. The Natives were a little restless up there. I would think after you had two league-recognized championships in a row, you'd kind of not be so tough on them. But, yeah, it was the local media was a little harsh on them towards the end of the year, and it just was a bad combo. They had some guys that did not perform as well as they did a year ago, and injuries to Kevin Garcia behind home plate and Andrew Sohn proved to hurt the ball club also. So, and the pitching was a little off too. So just, you know, a lot of little things kind of add up to a big mess up there.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing because they had come into the season with such a huge bonus with that starting staff. They bring in Alex Boshears. They already had a top-notch group there. Charlie Rosario heads for Mexico, and Boshears and Kevin McGovern didn't have the kind of season we were used to. It was just kind of surprising. But I got to tell you, though, Kevin, to hear that there was skepticism or rumblings going on up there in Winnipeg over the last month of the season, and you and I talked a little bit about this as that was occurring, I'm thinking, man, what do you want from this guy? God, Rick Forney has built you two championship teams in a row, and you're griping? I mean, I guess you're getting a little spoiled in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I guess so. Between the Goldeyes and now how good their NHL team is with Winnipeg Jets, yeah, I guess they're kind of used to winning up there, and they're not going to take anything less than success.
Maybe they got that hockey attitude.
You can't spill Winnipeg without a W.
Maybe they got that hockey attitude where if a coach is only good for a couple of 3 years, then they're out the door. It always
right,
seems like.
Yes. You know, that's amazing, too, that franchise that's been 25 years. Well, he had 2 years of Doug Simonek to start the franchise. And then since then, you've only had two other managers.
Pretty remarkable, for sure. Pretty remarkable. Well, during the season, manager George Samus of the St. Paul Saints wins his 1,000th game as a independent baseball manager. I believe the fourth manager in independent baseball history to accomplish that. Quite a feat there for the St. Paul Saints manager.
Yeah, if you talk to Samus, though, ever the perfectionist, he would have told you that he would have liked to have celebrated a year before. As you remember, the 2017 team really fell apart in the second half. But, yeah, and the thing is, Samus got that 1,000th win. And then, like 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, he started retooling the team. So, it was like a lot of guys that helped him get to 1,000 weren't around that long after it happened. So, it seems kind of appropriate.
We're going to be seeing the 1,000-win season this upcoming year as long as Kansas City, I think, wins 38 or 39 games for manager Joe Calfapietra this year. We did not have
a change of license plate again.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. 1,000.
Yes.
After there was not an All-Star game this season, Kevin, but next season there will be.
Yes, it just didn't materialize this year. Nobody wanted to host it. But, oh my, I'm watching TV here as we're doing the show and just saw that Finland beat Canada in the World Juniors Tournament. And in Canada, that's a huge deal. They're going to be very unhappy with that loss up there. Well, if you think Winnipeg fans are fussy now.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be talking tonight.
But getting back to what we were talking about here. What were we talking about?
The All-Star game.
Yeah, the All-Star game, of course. St. Paul stepped up, and they're going to host it for the second time in 4 years. And what we didn't know until recently is that it will be strictly an American Association affair, as the Can-Am League has decided to partner with the Frontier League for an All-Star game this year. And I think it's good for the American Association, too. It allows the league to showcase more of their players instead of having a split half of one team for Can-Am League guys.
I would believe that will ensure that one player comes from every team, too, so that would be a good thing. So.
Oh, at least, as you know, if you're fielding a team of 20 and you got like six teams in your division, so I think you'd have to have at least two or three.
That would be nice to see.
It'll be another good party. That's fun. You know, doing the show with you, we've made a lot of connections throughout the league the last couple of years. Guys I didn't know the last time the All-Star game was in town. So I'll be looking to, enjoy the night with a couple of them at a local establishment.
Kevin Luka will be partying like it's 2015. That's what he's going to be doing. Also going on
at the rooftop.
That's right. Exactly right. Also going around the league, Kevin, as we headed into August, there were a few incidences kind of all centered around Fargo that was interesting there. It began with, I believe, with Kerry Delacruz. That was the start of the whole incident, getting in a fight, or actually kind of attacking a player from Sioux City, was immediately released by manager Michael Schlacht. In a move that really, you know, not only shows Michael's courage because this is one of his best ball players, but understanding, too, this kind of stuff just can't go on.
I believe it happened after the other incident we're going to talk about. But, yeah, anyway, so it was good immediate action by Michael Schlacht and the Fargo-Moorhead front office to immediately release De La Cruz and kind of distance themselves from the situation. So good job on the part of the Red Hawks there.
The Red Hawks had a couple of games within a week period of time that made them their way onto ESPN. The first began when Brendan Metzger proved that he was, I guess, Fargo's version of Oscar the Grouch or something.
Yeah, it was the video that went viral showed that he decided that the umpire's home was the garbage can, and he conveniently placed it at the home plate area. So it earned Metzger a timeout, and for once, independent leagues made it all the way into the so-called worldwide leader in sports. So,
it seemed that it was not the incident itself that was as big of a deal. It was the continuation of that incident the next day with the team rallying around making fun of umpires, which led to a big change in the league.
Yeah, that was someone not monitoring the social media intern well enough. You know, there's a line, and where they say measure twice, cut once. So that was something they should have thought about a little more before they decided to start making some humor about the situation.
The head of which
we believe led to the head of the umpires stepping down.
Which kind of dramatic thing, because, you know, when it happened at the time, I thought to myself, you know, this is not really looking good. If I'm an umpire out there wanting a job, and I was at AA or AAA, and now I'm kind of looking for a position, I'm sure not going to American Association if I'm going to be mocked like this.
Right, and, yeah, you know, these guys are no dummies. So, you know, we talk about often in sports, you know, guys see stuff like that, and you're like you said, that's not a league we're going to go to. I was just listening to the podcast, and they were talking about the incident in Dallas where the owner of the team pretty much said two guys have been horse bleep, and the point they made in the podcast is, okay, if I'm a free agent, is that somewhere I want to go to play? Well, to relate it to our case, you know, umpires that are looking for somewhere to umpire are going to see that and say, is that a league I want to go umpire in? So,
a few days after that, there in Fargo, Chicago manager Butch Hobson argued a call that was at home plate. To be honest with you, I watched the call. It looked like it was right, the call was right. Okay, Hobson disagreed. Did one of his famous routines of pretending he's hitting a home run and trotted around the diamond, which took 4 or 5 minutes for the whole incident to occur. That obviously didn't sit well with the league either, understandably so, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, if you remember, that incident happened in Sioux City. It was the one that happened in Fargo was the night after the Metzger incident where Hobson did his, and I guess it's kind of one of his trademark things where they'll disagree with the call of the base and pull out the base,
hand it to the fan.
But yeah, later on that same week, he decided to, I don't know how many homers he had in the majors, but he decided to bring back his home run trot. So
99, I think, as a matter of fact. So if I remember that correctly, so he got his 100th. If we want to count that one.
I suppose, you know, he's managing in a different league and people in the Midwest haven't seen his act yet. So I guess it was something he used to always do all these too. So.
Well, as the season was moving along, exciting pennant races that eventually came down in the North between three teams. Fargo-Moorhead kind of faltered in the last week, but a down-to-the-last-day battle between Gary Southshore, a team I think both of us were really surprised was battling for the division title come September, and the St. Paul Saints. Gary won it simply on a head-to-head record. But quite an exciting pennant race there in the North. That was a little bit of a surprise because both of us had thought that Fargo would kind of run away with this division.
Yeah, I left Fargo in early August after a Saints series up there thinking that Fargo was going to be the team to beat. And lo and behold, they went into a nosedive, and it became between Gary and St. Paul to see who was going to be first and second seed in the North Division. And that's kind of crazy. It just, I mean, that thing went down all the way to later on, I believe, Monday afternoon. So the Saints beat Winnipeg on Labor Day morning, and they didn't really know what to do. They should celebrate or what, because they had to wait until see what happened in the Kansas City versus Gary game. So it was... You know, we talked about it going to the last day, and that was indeed the case.
Sioux City had ran away with the South almost from the start of the season. By, you know, middle of June, it looked like they were already going to be the division winners. But an exciting battle down there in the South for the second spot, which also came down the last weekend before Kansas City wound up winning that division. Two big stories going on there. First of all, Kevin was talking about Wichita coming to an end. Their season didn't just mean the end of the season. It meant the end of the franchise, as the organization will be suspended operations, as Wichita will bring in a AAA team to replace the Wingnuts. Very bittersweet for them, not only not making the playoffs for the first time since 2010, but then the franchise coming to an end.
Yeah, it would have been storybook for them to at least have another playoff run, but it just wasn't meant to be, and give credit to Kansas City for persevering through a real tough division to get that second seed. But yeah, you look at it on the surface, Wichita's always been a good member of the league. They've sent players back to organizations, they've always won, they've always had fan support, and it's just usually one or more of those things are lacking whenever a team ceases operations. But yeah, just an odd set of circumstances there.
Those Kansas City T-Bones wound up winning the division as they, I think, took two out of four in Gary, if I remember that correctly, to wind up winning the division. But what we really have to talk about is the job that manager Joe Calfapietra did this season. There were 29 signings around the American Association that went back to affiliate baseball. An awesome season in that, and that's a story in and of itself. But 10 of those players came from the Kansas City T-Bones alone, and he had three other ones that headed to Mexico, and I think one that headed to Taiwan or something. The 13 of the 23 players left. And you still had a team that won a playoff berth. That's remarkable.
Well, I think it gets back to what we were just talking about with umpires, that on a player front, and our colleague Dan Vaughn has kind of pointed this out several times, guys get signed by a team, other players look at it and say, hey, that guy went to Kansas City and he got signed by a major league ball club. Maybe that's somewhere I want to go. I can get noticed and I can get signed again. So it just kind of continues a cycle where Kansas City's going to be a hot spot for players to go that want to get back in organizations. And I think scouts see that too, where if guys are going to Kansas City, all the scouts are going to go there too and give these guys a look. And we saw what happened with the T-Bones.
You know, it was remarkable to me because the very first night of the season, their starting pitcher has to be pulled. They're going to be the number one guy on the staff is pulled right off the bat because he's signed by somebody else. Okay, and the New York Mets, I think, came in and swooped out their number one starter. But the guy just, he lost his starting shortstop, his starting second baseman, his two of his three starting outfielders, and I think really he had his catcher and right fielder, I believe, were the only two guys that stayed the entire season. Lost bullpen guys, lost starting pitchers, and still wound up winning 63 games, I believe it is. I got to tell you, Kevin, I've seen a lot of great managing jobs out there, and I understand it's part of your reputation, but the team chemistry part of that is the part that I find so amazing, because when you're changing that much, I would think it's hard to kind of get going, but it really, I think, showed what a good manager Joe is.
Makes me wonder if the guys had to wear name tags, the way everyone's kind of shuttling in and out.
You know, I also...
Not to mention the traveling secretary who's has to try to figure out who the heck's on the team, and as far as lining up who's gonna stay with who in whatever room.
Yeah, the guy assigning jerseys and getting names on him had a lot of work to do this season. You know, I also want to give kind of a perk out there to Joe Calfapietra, because two times this season I was coming into his office as he was in a situation of releasing a player. And it amazed me that this guy did not just release players. He was calling around to every organization he could throughout baseball to get a spot for these guys to go to. It wasn't like, hey, I got somebody else coming in. It's a business. Got to let you go. He wanted to ensure his guys had jobs once they left the team, and he got them. You know, I mean, he called around and he got jobs for these guys. And I think you talked a lot about players appreciating the fact that they had a better chance to get back to an affiliate in their eyes by signing with the team owns. But I thought it was really his caring and concern for his players that was the biggest selling point of all.
And that, too, is something that, you know, stuff like that gets around to the players also, where, you know, these guys talk, these guys read social media, and they hear about this kind of stuff happening, and it just makes Kansas City a nice destination for these guys to play ball.
Well, we head into the playoffs, Kevin. The Saints take one of two from in Gary, and then come back home and finish off the series.
It was the other way around.
Well, the other way around. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, took one of two in. They took the first two in St. Paul. Was that right?
The first two in St. Paul, and then they lost one in Gary, and then
that's right. That's right.
And game four.
That's right. And Gary had done such a great job of doing all the little things right. It just seemed that they kind of just reached the end. The starting staff, the loss of Daniel Minor, who is clearly going to be the top pitcher in the league until he goes to Mexico, just showed, because you just needed an ace at that time, and they just didn't have that then.
No, they didn't. And St. Paul, the bats are going really good in games one and two, and they got shut down in game three, but managed to conjure up enough offense in the cavernous steel yard to make it work in game four. So, yeah, just St. Paul just kind of rose to the occasion, and it just seemed like Gary or whatever was working for him all year, they just couldn't get it going again.
Kansas City and Sioux City battle off in the South. They split the first two in Kansas City, even beating the T-Bones ace to start out in game one. Go back, it's tied at two heading into a game five. Unfortunately, one critical play cost Sioux City a chance to advance on, and Kansas City wins that series.
Yeah, just a real, real tough way for the season end for the Explorers, with Michael Lang losing a fly ball to right field that led to the winning runs scoring. But, you know, as much as you can point to one play, it's the fact that Kansas City did shut down the Explorers in Game 5, too. So Explorers had every chance to come back, but the T-Bones pitching was just too much to overcome.
With Kansas City and St. Paul in the championship series, exciting time. Kansas City wins it in 4 games, though. Congratulations to Joe Calfapietra and the Kansas City T-Bones. Your thoughts on that series?
Well, you know, I haven't brought this one up before, but my colleague Bill Tyler that I traveled with to Kansas City, he made the point, he was second-guessing George Samus on this one. If you remember, Chris Nunn started Game 1, and
yes,
it did not go well. Eddie Medina pitched Game 2 and pitched a classic.
Yes.
Bill Tyler's theory was they should have flipped those guys around, and that you would have had Medina going Game 1, and then you're able to bring Medina back for a Game 4 instead of having to go to Nunn again. Nunn pitched admirably in Game 4, but if Medina throws another classic, though, then all of a sudden your series is tied up 2-2, and who knows what happens in a Game 5. But hindsight is 20/20. You know, what happened was KC got the bat thrown in Game 1. Medina pitched well in Game 2. Kansas City had been on the road for quite a bit, so he may have been a little disinterested in Game 2, but home cooking and served the T-Bones well, and they got clutch hits from guys like Curcio and Alay Lago, and St. Paul's bullpen just didn't hold up as well as it did during the regular season, so that was the difference.
Exciting series, though, and you know, and I get where Bill is coming from. You know, I this is one of those situations, though, that I look and I think a manager knows best about his team, and you know, Chris Nunn had pitched beautifully for this team all season long. Not that Eddie Medina didn't, because he was phenomenal all year for them as well. I just think, you know, a manager just kind of knows what's best for their team, I guess. So disappointing end for the season for the St. Paul Saints, though, and for poor Sean Aaronson, who's still looking for that championship call out there.
Yes, I feel, you know, as much as you and I have just gotten to know the whole organization, the whole front office, they've always been so accommodating to us. We basically set up shop in the press box of CHS Field. I just want them all to get a championship more sooner than later. And it's been a long wait for a franchise that's put out some pretty damn good teams. So I would love to see them get a ring more sooner than later.
I think Dan Vaughn then became the first play-by-play announcer in the league to call championships for 2 different teams. They had Gary Southshore in 2013 and the Kansas City T-Bones this last season. So congratulations to Dan on that kind of feat. He's a good luck charm. Yeah, he's a good
ring chaser.
Yeah. That could be the case. Well, Kevin, it'll
be hard for him to get through the airport, isn't it?
Yeah, he's going to have all these big studded rings to wear now. The big news, though, for this upcoming season already is going to be with Wichita out. We have a new team, the Milwaukee Milkmen, who will be taking place, moving to the North Division. Sioux Falls will be heading to the South, and we're going to have another expansion team starting in 2019.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what their path is, if they're going to go with younger guys or more established players. We'll see if they can get off to a better start than the Chicago Dogs did. And I don't know, unless you know something I don't, we still don't even know who the manager is.
No, we don't. Or the general manager at this point. So
right.
We're down to an owner and a president of the team, I guess. Somebody's pulling the strings because they're making a lot of moves out there. So something's
right.
Going on. Something's going on there in Milwaukee.
Guess we're not doing our work. We're not doing our job, and we're not getting to the bottom of it. But
I've been working on trying to find out a little more information on this team, but I'm at a roadblock. We're gonna have to start grinding out some information here to find out what's going on.
Again, yeah, no one seems to know what the hockey rink is. I guess that's where only Spotify been pretty much the last 3 months. So,
well, Kevin, any final thoughts on the 2018 season?
You know, just on a personal level, it was such a fun ride. You know, I've gotten to know more of the front office people and broadcasters and fans. It seems like a big extended summer family, and with all the subplots going on throughout the season, on and off the field, it was a real entertaining summer, and I was just kind of sad to see it all end. But, you know, we'll all be gathered again around May, and we'll all be keeping in touch throughout social media. You know, there'll be podcasts and that coming out, and, you know, maybe I'll be on with Brett Allred or with Dan Vaughn or whoever, doing some hot stove action. So that'll carry us over until next May, when 2019 season will open up and we'll have all kinds of new stories to follow.
You know, Kevin, the thing I'm going to take away from this season that I was really glad to see was there were teams that did not materialize the way that we thought, that people around the league thought. And I think that puts some managers in jeopardy. I think some would question, you know, the job that Butch Hopton did in Chicago or the job that Mike Meyer did in Sioux Falls. But both these guys are going to be back, and I'm glad to see that. Got to know both of them pretty well this season and like both of them a great deal and glad to see them. Disappointed for Shelby Ford that he's out in Cleburne as Brent Cleveland moves down there from Wichita to take over that job. But play-by-play guys, too. Denning Gehrig was going to be out of a job because the Wichita Wingnuts were gone, but now he'll be joining Brad down there in Cleburne. And I understand that our good buddy Michael there in Cleburne moved on to, I think he's taking the Lincoln job is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing also.
So it's good to see that people that you and I have got to know well and who have had a good impact on this league are still going to be around, and that we're going to get to know those faces even better in the upcoming season.
Well, that's the thing. You know, to the casual fan, they just see these guys by name and by what they do in the field or what they do in the broadcast booth, whereas, you know, you and I, with our access, we get to know these people as humans, you know, and it's fun to follow how they progress in their respective careers, and it just becomes just more than just a game. It just, you know, like I said, just they kind of become family.
Absolutely. I'm excited. John McLaren, from what I understand, will be back again in Texas this season to help prep that team for future endeavors there for the Chinese group. And this is 2019 is going to be an exciting time, I think, and we're going to see some exciting baseball. We're going to have a little less traveling to do, but most of centralized towards the north now, with the exception of the two Texas teams. But I think this is going to be an exciting season that I hope that we see this season the one thing that we saw last year, which was a lot of AAA and Major League and AA talent join the American Association. And I sincerely hope that trend continues this year, because I think that made for the best American Association season I've seen in the five seasons I've been watching it.
Yeah, I think, too, that other than the Atlantic League, where guys were getting paid more and it's just – and the distances to travel aren't – as daunting as other leagues. I just think other than that league, the American Association is getting to be a real popular place for guys to go. Can-Am League, I don't know, when you get down to like six teams and you're having to do stuff by like bringing in a team for a couple weeks, I just think it kind of cheapens your product a bit. So, and players see that, and I think it affects their decisions. So, I think we're going to continually see the quality of play get even better in the American Association.
Well, that means our quality of play's got a little bit better as well, and that means we got to come up with some kind of information about Milwaukee. Our next broadcast, I'm going to have something. I don't know what it is, Kevin, but I'm going to have something going on for Milwaukee.
I need to get an alibi to go over there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I was trying to line up with Iowa Wild hockey schedule, but nothing really seems to click as far as them going to Milwaukee at a time in which I could go over there myself. So, speaking of hockey, we just heard that the Winter Classic next year is going to be competed at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. And to get back to our point about how guys become family, as soon as I heard that, the Winter Classic in Dallas, I thought, Dan Vaughn, Brad Allred.
That's right. They're going to get a New Year. That's right.
I'm coming to spend New Year's Day with them.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They better have a spot saved for us there at the Cotton Bowl because we want to be there. I couldn't agree more.
And boy, if they end up playing Minnesota in that, I mean, it would just be ideal. But, you know, I think I'm going to go down there regardless. Winter Classic, if you don't have to freeze your ass off, then it's just an ideal setup. And I told those guys, you'll have to play tour guide for me. I want to see the ballparks, even though they're not in season. So, be a fun time.
Don't believe you're going to be not freezing your butt off, though, because in Wichita it was 7 degrees on January 1st. That was the high, just so you know. So it can get a little cold down here, too. So, well, Kevin, I'm looking forward to the season. I think it's time to play ball. January's got me excited that we're in 2019 now, and we're just a few months away from May getting underway here for our season. And looks like we're going to have a lot of fun this year.
Right. Just got like a month and a half till pitchers and catchers report for the major leagues. And then about a month after that, you'll see guys getting released. And that's when you'll see more signings with the American Association. And we'll be able to see rosters start to take shape of the teams that haven't brought back everybody from a year ago. So we'll see the approach that everybody chooses to take this year.
And I will be starting to do pretty much daily articles starting on January 3rd, heading us up into the season as it's time to start looking at acquisitions that are being made and how teams are improving and stories that are going on around the league. And so I'll be keeping you up to date on what's happened to that point. And Kevin, do we got stuff going on with Kevin Lucco there at the 10th inning stretch right now?
Oh, well, we're a little dry, but I will be keeping everybody up abreast or up to date if anything happens through our This Week in the Association Facebook page and through our Twitter account at TWITA Baseball. So,
Not just Twitter, though.
No. We got the Facebook account, too, at our Facebook page at This Week in the Association. If any news pops up, we'll be sure to get the word out. And by all means, if you join and want to start a conversation about anything, we're always game for Huntsville League action. So,
absolutely. For my good buddy Kevin Lucco from the 10th inning stretch, I'm Rob Fanier from the Minor League Sports Report. And we'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.